Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. This is going to be a reminder of truth, compilation of truth, and maybe a bit of an extension of a conversation that I've had before to kind of the further implications. So the basis for this is go check out Penny Butler. I think it's .com, pennybutler.com. She's out of Australia. Very impressive website. I don't compile my stuff. I've never really had a website like that, like a WordPress or something. She's compiled great stuff all around COVID and many other things. And so I saw this and I said, man, I need to interview her. I've been wanting to start to interview people instead. She didn't want to, but as a result, I ended up into the kind of the group chat for her webpage. And she brought up this question and it made me go back and look back into it, and thus my analysis here. And her question was, hey, they're killing hundreds of thousands of chickens down here, destroying our food supply. And it's based on the PCR test. Remember how we knew that there were the frailties and the fraudulent aspects? And can anybody sum it up exactly what's wrong with the PCR test? So I thought, well, I don't have exactly down to the scientific grain, but I do have some stuff. So it made me review. A quick aside, I do think that part of the PSYOP is to think that in order to oppose them, you have to have every, you know, mind your P's and Q's, dot your I's, cross your T's. When at some point it's called circumstantial evidence. Took me a little while on that one. So anyway, I looked up, and it's going to be based on an old episode that I had. And it's going to be really based on the idea of PCR testing and them admitting in an FDA article exactly what they do with that PCR testing. And then, unfortunately, how it could extend to any of these time periods where they're trying to manipulate and tell us that we have to go into like an emergency type reaction instead of just letting healthcare happen organically and have it be based on whether or not you have symptoms and we react without something being pushed down our throats. So I had referred to an FDA article. It's now on their archive page, public4.pagefreezer.com, public4.pagefreezer.com. And the name of the article is, I'm going to just flip through these concepts because when I've been trying to do this before, I've started this episode about six times. The article is SARS-CoV-2 Reference Panel Comparative Data. So as to that, what this is saying is saying, hey, we have a reference panel, but it's what's admitted in the interstitials here that's important. We have a reference panel, and right here we're reporting on all of our various testing for COVID-2. We're having the people have to compare it to the reference panel and give limit of detection results. And so it turns out the SARS-CoV-2 reference panel was, you know, says, hey, here's some really good standard material. You check your test against this standard material. How much of this does it take to detect it in your test? And also, we have a MERS for cross-reactivity. So apparently this is the best they do for a false positive. And we'll go into why that's a mistake. So, again, I'm not going to quote this. I'm just going to tell you, and you can go find it, because I don't want to be quoting a bunch of things that's taken too long already. So, this article says, listen, early on, we didn't have a specimen. We did not have a specimen, and I also think it's funny that they up top they say nucleic acid-based amplification tests instead of PCR, but then when you go down and you see the results, most all of the tests say PCR right in the name. So they mean PCR test, which makes sense, nucleic acid-based. I think some of that was trying to hide the ball so that investigators didn't find this as quickly. So they said, yeah, so we did not have a reference. And so we said, hey, those people are authorized to make these in vitro diagnostics. Just go ahead and use something. Use it from a range of SARS-CoV-2 material sources, gene-specific RNA, synthetic RNA, whole genome viral RNA, and, you know, create your tests from that. We don't have it. So they use the term contrived multiple times. So they allow the test being from contrived samples. And then they say validation using these contrived specimens provided a measure of confidence at the beginning, but it's not feasible to precisely compare the performance of various tests that use contrived specimens because each test validated performance using samples derived from different gene-specific synthetic or genomic nucleic acid. Now, an important timeline for you to understand how this crosses over into other areas is that was from February through May. 59 different EUAs were issued, emergency use authorizations for these IVDs, these in vitro diagnostics for these tests. Well, to that point, they're not checking against actual COVID unless they just decide to try to go isolate a specimen themselves. Who knows what they're checking it against? But then they said, hey, on May, and so we're way into mid-May, May 11th, they say, hey, you may want to check your test against some patient specimens. Well, again, though, what's a patient? Someone with symptoms that is tested positive. So it's circular. Yeah, just check it against your patient-derived specimens. Yeah, do that. And then eventually they said, hey, we end up having a actual reference panel. And this reference panel has an heat-inactivated COVID-2 strain. Because remember, it better be heat-inactivated because, well, never mind that. Just never mind what I was saying there. And one heat-inactivated MERS-CoV strain. Apparently, the MERS is supposed to check against a false positive. Well, there's a problem there, right? Because would the false positives be the family of coronaviruses? And when they say, hey, just go find something to use, well, they didn't have COVID-2, most of them. Unless they were mandated to isolate COVID-2, how many of them did? And so they didn't have COVID-2. What are they looking at to create their specimen? I mean, their test, the specimen that defines what their test detects. They're probably looking at a family of coronaviruses. I mean, if they had isolated the thing, then we wouldn't be talking about the fact that we know you don't have good isolated specimens. So we don't expect you to have isolated the specimens. So what did they do? So an important emphasis here is that from February all the way until at least May, all of those tests were created off of your best guess. They were not created off of a sample. And among 59, there would be wildly varying best guesses. And you'll, in very quickly, without me looking at the results, you can listen to, I think I did this as a previous episode. No, I didn't do it as a previous episode. Go find the original, which was back in 2022, I think. And it went over the levels of detection. If you want some evidence, circumstantial evidence that these are wildly varying, like we think they're wildly varying, then just understand that the limits of detection varied by thousands fold. The best supposedly detected at 180, quote, units. The worst was at 600,000. So 540,000 units would be 3,000 times the quantity needed to even detect it. So doesn't that mean something as to what they're using to detect it? Most likely it does. So they come out with this reference panel, but they don't say, hey, now that we have a good specimen, recreate your test. They don't say that. They could have done that as early as May and said, and then use this as a standard. Now that we have a good specimen, they'll be standardized. And in fact, they never did that. Not for the next year, not for the next year and a half, did they say, hey, go ahead, and it's implied or said right in here, because they never said, as the background and the development, they never said, hey, now use this. Because even in this is an article from later 2020, October-ish, maybe November, where they're saying, hey, so they're checking against this cross-panel. Okay, I know you made your PCR test based on a certain specimen that you just made up. Well, just to check how accurate it might be, we're going to check against our specimen. So use our specimen and run your test against it. Notice that is not the same thing as change your test. They did not tell these people, hey, since we had to approximate so much at the beginning, do it, but don't create very many of them. And even from the very beginning, people acted like the only thing you could do is believe the tests. But yet here we are saying there was 59 approximations. 59 best guesses. And then when they did get the specimen, the most they do is say, hey, just let us know what you find out as far as just limits of detection for these tests. And so the test is only one strain and one cross reactant. That's the MERS. Well, why did they pick the, you know, non-novel coronaviruses as cross reactants? Because they don't want you to know that those PCR tests would be stopped in their tracks, many of them, if you picked as a cross reactant to check for a false positive, if you picked one of the non-novel coronavirus flu specimens. Because again, how are they building their tests? Is it going to be based on the spike protein, which is the one novel part or the most novel part? Is it going to be based on that novel part? Well, how would it be? Because they're saying we still have to isolate the specimen. So maybe they can, because they did say, hey, you can also have a synthetic specimen, if you will, to create your test against. You know, maybe they went into the genome and created their own spike protein specimen to work their test against. Maybe. But how many of them actually did that? How many of them more than likely said, well, geez, we get to approximate. What's a good approximation? Hey, they're allowing us to do this. Part of the coronavirus that we already know. So, yeah, in May, they're like, hey, check against it. And again, it's only limit of detection when they do check against it. And they say, and even among some of these, some of them did react to MERS. A totally different family of viruses. A totally different family of, you know, cross-to-human flu viruses. And some of them actually did react. But again, no negative, no check against regular coronaviruses. Just a check to see if you can detect this one. So do you see how this is easily, when you want to create the same thing, you come up with tests. After all, they come up in their little wrapper. They're sterile. And then you get a positive, and it's either positive or not. Maybe you have to run it instead of it showing right on the thing. It's not a pregnancy test. But nonetheless, and then they amplify it. Well, if it's based on some of the things that are common to COVID-19 and to coronaviruses, well, it's any number of flus that will hit that if you multiply it enough. Never mind the idea that, as discussed, that if you multiply anything enough, you'll likely find it if it was there at all. It doesn't have to be to contagious amounts. You can be beyond contagion or before contagion. Your body killed it off so quickly that it would never even created symptoms. And we know that early on, before we had the vaccine injuries and people were paying attention to the symptoms, they specifically screamed how asymptomatic much of it was. Well, if it's asymptomatic, there's such tiny amounts, how is it going to escape from your lungs? So they never standardized. If they didn't have to change them, then how could they be valid for all the mutations? And in fact, they say, hey, the thing is, in this very article, they say, listen, this does not take place of other, what do they refer to it as other ways to check your test. Because in fact, this test is only about one strain of coronavirus and only against MERS. So you should do some of these other, see EUA template. Okay, well, if it's only against one strain of the coronavirus, well, first of all, one would particularly think they would have used a spike protein, which shouldn't change too much, but as I've discussed before, it's the newest thing. It might be the thing that might change the most, except, of course, that it was engineered. But nonetheless, it's like, okay, how could they be valid for all the mutations? You yourself are saying this is no substitution for your other validations of your test. And what if this is a regular way? And why would we expect it wouldn't? At least, first of all, it could be the regular way anytime. So let's say bird coronavirus, it's a new novel one. This is a bird flu. I don't mean bird coronavirus. the bird flu that's suddenly so novel it's killing chickens. And in order to stop the chickens from being killed, we kill 100,000 chickens. Eh? Why don't we just keep the ones that make it to butchering? Viruses don't last in cooked meat, you freak. So, anyway, we have a novel bird flu virus. And it's deadly because it's novel. Huh, where have we seen this movie before? Well, if it's deadly because it's novel, how are you testing against it? How are you testing against the novel aspects of it as opposed to the one that goes through the bird population? They do fine. How are you doing it? Are you allowing basically emergency use authorization or the functional equivalent thereof? Because if it's an emergency and you have to test for this specifically, did you get the specimens to the manufacturers? How did you, if you have to isolate it in time for them to be testing early? It's possible, but again, if you isolated it, got it to the companies early enough so that they could create it while it's still a problem, is it not just a perception and you're saying that it's still a problem? Because isn't that months? How long does it take it to attain crowd immunity, herd immunity in the bird population so that it's not deadly anymore? And again, then, you're using PCR testing, and maybe it's very, very deadly, but maybe it's sometimes deadly. And instead, just like in COVID-19 and in AIDS, instead of saying, oh, this bird is doing poorly, let's put it down, you're saying it's going to do poorly, and you're not looking at the real world, you're looking at the matrix. And since it's going to do poorly based on this test, this is assuming it was even a good test, we're going to kill it. Well, no virus is even close to 100% death rate. So to no virus is close to 100% death rate. None. Ever. Ever. That's not the way this works. That's not the way any of this works. So why would we assume 100% death rate in birds? Now, it might be the excuse, well, it could cross to humans now that it's a giant leap to humans. To assume that it would is just flights of fancy. So, and again, the limit of detection is not testing false positives. So what if it's just circular? There's no real logic to it. How do you create the thing and have manufacturers come up with it and then distribute it even? So let's say they're supposed to create it. That's when it should be tested. Okay, is this good? And it should be tested properly, not just limit of detection, which could be any related virus they could create it off of. So they should test it before it's continually manufactured and distributed. Once it's manufactured and distributed, you're talking at least weeks, if not a couple months. So now you're weeks to months into the spread, which means herd immunity. So why would we think, in some sense, and again, this is breadcrumbs, I've not figured it out, but I've told you some pretty good, you know, reasons to speculate, that any of the time that when they're testing for a novel thing, that they have actually created the tests only after they've found the novel thing and distributed it to the testing manufacturers? And why would we think that by the time the testing is available, that it is still novel? See, the fake tests just fuel the numbers and say it must still be novel, because after all, we're getting all these positives. Yeah, but your PCR test didn't check for novel, most likely. Did you say create something we got to go with best we can so we can get a test out there? It's the cart leading the horse, gentlemen and ladies. It is the cart leading the horse. And more so when it's an emergency directed by jerks like Fauci and the worst of the CDC And folks like World Economic Forum and other freaks like a Newsom or the like. So there you go, guys. It could be the way it is always. Hope that compilation of thought helped you out. Thanks.